formation. He's going for the corner. He's got it. Texas is back, folks.
You want to go to war, Malaki? Because we could go to war.
We're back. Hello to all my non-Brockermeyers, and welcome back to another episode of the Fire Blake Brockermeyer podcast. My name is Josh. I'm joined today by my co-host, Noah, and today we're talking about the Brockermeyer twins not committing to Texas, why that makes Blake Brockermeyer a bad person, and also whatever else went on with the football team since we released our last episode in June, which is probably a lot of stuff. I don't remember how long it's been since we recorded, but we're just going to see where it goes, I think.
Really kicking this off with a nice and cheery mood there, Josh.
I mean, there's just a lot to be nice and
you know, listeners
about,
haven't had a pod episode in a while, and we're just immediately going in with the Brockermeyer recruitment.
I mean, it's the big news. They say sex sells, and this is the closest we're going to get with this podcast. So
yeah. Well, it was a big loss, for sure. I don't want to deny that at all. But they did both commit to Alabama earlier this week, last week, something like that. So yeah, definitely a big L for the OL recruiting there.
Yeah, not great. Certainly, I think it gets Kalavon Chaisson off the hook of being Tom Herman's most bungled recruitment of any one player. Because this is a whole nother level. You're talking triple legacies, twins, positions in need.
Brother on the team.
And we had basically... Yeah, brothers on the team. We basically put all of our O-line recruiting eggs into the basket of getting Tommy and James. Tommy being the bigger prize, obviously being five-star and out at offensive tackle, but centers can be a little tricky sometimes, and we see that when we've got guys like Rafidi Hirmai trying to snap the ball when Zach Shackelford was out for a couple snaps last year. Can be a little iffy there, so certainly don't want to downplay not landing James. Definitely wanted both guys, but Tommy's a real big loss because you can never have too many five-star offensive tackles on your roster.
Yeah, and you know, something that I just realized, you mentioned Girmay, that will be our last glimpse of a non-Shackelford center snapping as Girmay in the spring game last year with all the bungled snaps going into this season. So that's, of course, one effect of not having spring football, no spring game, is our last judgment on a lot of these guys is what they did a year ago when Brew McCoy was on the team and playing. So, yeah, that just kind of hit me. Just crazy to think about.
But, yeah, we'll have Derek Kerstetter. At least the insiders are saying Kerstetter is going to be the guy at center, which I'm not sure how I feel about that. Obviously, the coaches trust him. They believe he's a smart guy, that he's going to be able to have an impact at center. But, really, I think he played really well for all the issues that our offensive line had last year. They did not come in the form of the pass rush being allowed on the ends with Kerstetter at right tackle and obviously Cosme at left. So, I don't know. This one especially hurts, especially the more you listen to guys, not the 995ers, but those guys on Surly or on our Longhorn Nation who seemed like they had sort of a finger on the pulse of what was going on behind the scenes and wanted to talk about what the 995ers weren't talking about, whether or not Blake Brockermeyer played a huge role in their recruitment, and what kind of role he had. Because it sounded like Brockermeyer didn't get along with Tom Herman, which I can't blame him for. Tom Herman isn't necessarily the warmest guy in the room. But it sounds like there was a lot of sort of that clash where it's like, I mean, one person can be an asshole and two people can be assholes, but that doesn't mean both of those guys are going to get along because they're both assholes. It sounds like one of those sort of clashes where it's just two strong personalities of guys who aren't super warm and fuzzy guys just butting heads, and that sort of splintered the relationship from there. And from there, it almost sounded like we were playing catch up the rest of the way.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not one of those people with inside information there. That was kind of my impression of it as well. And at the end of the day, it ends up being, I mean, a huge, huge recruiting miss in Texas history, at least since I've been following recruiting, probably the biggest miss, which was about when Herman took over. So yeah, big miss there. And it's just one of those things where sometimes Herman applies himself to recruitment and does an incredible job. Like, I think you can see that with the Broughtons last year. And then sometimes he either doesn't apply himself or he does and comes off wrong. And I don't know, it's a little bit hit or miss, and in this case, it was definitely a big miss.
But I would like to sort of, a lot of 995ers were definitely up in their feelings, a lot of fans, and for good reason they were up in their feelings, but a lot of people were starting to use this sort of as an indictment on Herb Hand, and while obviously, again, it's never a good thing to lose triple legacies at positions in need, Herb Hand has shown through his time at Texas, developing Kerstetter, developing Cosme, those are low three-star guys. So that it sort of brings back the star ratings aren't everything, especially on the offensive line. Herb Hand has talked at length about that, about how he's not necessarily looking for the raw measurables. It's whether or not the guy can grow into the frame and whether or not he's got the right attitude. And Hand believes that he can coach a guy up from there. So again, you always want a five-star offensive tackle, especially one who is a legacy, who's a triple legacy like Tommy Brockermeyer was. But I'm not going to get completely doom and gloom about the future health of the offensive line. I think Herb Hand has shown enough to make me trust that he's going to be able to build that line back up, even if we have to go for three-star guys like Ezra, like Michael Malinsky, who could possibly be committing in the very near future. Or possibly will have committed by the time we release this. Who knows? So I'm not too panicked, at least about the health of the offensive line. I don't think it's going to be a weakness moving forward. But yeah, it definitely hurts. And I think it's really, at its most, it's really a big reflection of the coaching job that Tom Herman did in 2019, where we came in with all this hype and stumbled in the middle of the season until trying to like build back up right at the end. So I think that there's some optimism, maybe misplaced optimism, that if we do get a season this year, there is going to be a chance that we can flip them back, assuming we do things like take care of business in Baton Rouge, take care of Oklahoma. If we can win those games and not have those big hiccups, maybe we can convince the Twins that things are going well enough and they don't need to go to Alabama to win. But without that season, I think this is basically signed, sealed, delivered. It's kind of over if we don't have a season this year.
Probably. And yeah, I think the biggest thing that I would just point out from all that is that I agree that it's definitely just a reflection of the season we had last year. And you know, you come out with hype and you disappoint, then you're going to have to pick up some pieces. And that's what 2020 is all about. Of course, with the caveat that we have the opportunity to pick up those pieces.
Yeah, and that's not limited to football. That's basically the entire world, yeah. It seems like, is just sort of we're just trying to get through this year and pick up the pieces. Outside of that, we did have some positive things happen in recruiting. We won't go super in depth because, as we've said before, this is not a recruiting podcast. We're not going to pretend to be able to project guys. But since we last released an episode, we got two commitments. First one was four-star cornerback out of California, Jameer Johnson. And then we also got three-star tight end Gunnar Helm out of Cherry Creek, Colorado. So interesting, the last two commitments we've gotten, really I think the last three, because I think the one before this was Michael Pearson, the punter out of Australia. The last three guys have come from outside the state of Texas. And if Michael Malinsky also commits, he's coming from Florida. You've got guys like Jaden Alexis, also from Florida. Seems like we are going a little bit out of state here, so it's sort of a little bit of a trend there. Not a huge deal. I'm not one of those people who gets super worked up if we're not 75% in-state guys, but just sort of an interesting little trend we've got going there.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've shown that we can do it either way the last 2 years, recruiting in-state or out-of-state. It's really weird, though. It's just a weird trend where after we have the disappointing seasons, maybe my timeline is mixed up here, but after our disappointing seasons is when we've gone out of state to secure commitments, and after our big season was the one where we kind of stayed pat in Texas and weren't really able to pick up much as far as out-of-state blue chippers go.
Yeah, you'd think that a successful season would help you recruit more nationally rather than regionally, but yeah, we have been doing that a little weird. All right, so obviously the other big thing going on in the world remains COVID-19, the pandemic, continues to rage on, threatening baseball. Miami Marlins have half their team out sick, and basically they are the test case, Major League Baseball is, for playing sports not in a bubble. Obviously the NBA, MLS, NHL, all those have come back in some form at this point, but they're all sticking with the bubble thing, and the bubble seems to be mostly working out unless you need wings from an Atlanta strip club, in which case you will break the bubble to take care of that. But, I mean, as of today, as we're recording on Tuesday, the University of Texas announced that we currently have zero cases, zero people are in self-isolation, not just with the football team, but I believe the volleyball team and the basketball teams have all brought players back. We are standing at zero current cases of coronavirus. Do you think that's something that we can actually maintain, and what are your sort of thoughts? Where do you stand? I think last time we recorded, we felt pretty good that we were going to play, but as we've seen things progress, what do you think is going to happen?
I still think we're going to play, and the main reason that I think that we're going to play is because there's so much money involved, and I think that that was kind of the thing last time. I can't remember exactly what I said, but I did think that we'd be in a better spot in terms of the public health response, but I think that there's just so much money wrapped up in college football. There will be some kind of season. I obviously hope that it's in the fall and that we at least get a full slate of conference games. In terms of the sustainability of the team maintaining zero cases, it kind of depends on, I kind of lost track of how many guys have actually had it, and I don't know if they ever released teams that were specific to the football team, or sorry, if they ever released numbers that were specific to the football team, or if it was just like the athletics program, or all that's kind of important for, I don't even want to use the term, but for herd immunity, because that it's a terrible public health strategy, but if it happens to work out where enough of the team was, you know, immune, where it didn't really pose a risk, then that's something. It's kind of rambling here, but I'm hoping that we'll at least have like a delayed conference slate, but it really wouldn't surprise me if we just continue to see delays until eventually they cancel it.
And it sounds like we do have a couple ideas. Bob Bowlsby talked recently, I can't remember if it was today or in the past couple days, talked about how the Big 12 is considering doing a conference-only schedule. As many as 10 games could be played, which is going to require you to repeat a game, which means, theoretically, if that's a rivalry game, as has been discussed at some length, there's a possibility that we could play OU twice in the regular season, and if there's a Big 12 title game, possibly a third time in the same season, which I think would be absolutely insane if we did that. But I think if we are going to move forward like that, especially now that the State Fair of Texas has been canceled, it's really the only quote-unquote fair way to handle that, is if we're going to have to do a home-and-home with OU, if we don't play at the State Fair, the only fair way to do that is make both teams have their home game in half-empty stadiums, because otherwise you're going to end up with, well, they got a home game in the COVID year, so we get the home game in the not-COVID year in 2021, and there's a huge competitive advantage there, obviously. So I guess I could see that. At the same time, I think really these ideas are being floated, but I think the Big 12 at this point has every intention of just going for it with the 12-game schedule.
We should just do a home-and-home game, not like a series, like one game. Like, we play the first half in Austin, the second half in, what's the name of Norman? Remember the name of it.
It's very forgettable.
Yeah, so just, you know, split it up. Switch, like typically you switch ends of the field, but instead we could just switch fields.
I mean, that would put a lot of weight into the coin toss, because I think you definitely want that home field advantage in the second half more than the first half. So it would make the actual coin toss way more important.
Well, I'm assuming no fans, because I don't see. Yeah, I just don't see how we get more than a third of the stadium would shock me.
I think Ohio State just announced today, they told season ticket holders that Ohio Stadium will only be at 20%, which feels a lot more realistic than Chris Del Conte keeps telling us 50% at DKR, and that just feels completely unattainable, especially in a hotspot state.
Right. 20% honestly would even kind of surprise me at this point. Like, all the pro sports are doing no fans, right? NBA's no fans too. Yeah,
no fans, all in the bubble.
Yeah, so, I don't know, man. It's a mess. And the ugly truth that nobody has started talking about yet is we just might not end up with a season at all, not even this spring. I think a lot of people are saying, well, spring is worst-case scenario. But there's a chance we don't get out of this pandemic until April of next year. You know, even with vaccines, it takes time to deploy. It takes time to get vaccination rates up for them to be effective for the population. So it wouldn't surprise me if there's no 2020 season at all.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, and I said months ago, that was sort of the mindset I was preparing for, was I was expecting to have no football at all this season. So anything we do get, hopefully, is going to be deployed in a reasonably safe manner. But at that point, I mean, I'm not going to be able to tell them, hey, this is a really terrible idea from a public health perspective, because I think at this point it's established everyone knows that, or if they don't know that, they're only pretending to not realize how bad an idea that is. But yeah, anything we do get, I'll savor the little bit that we get and hope that it doesn't ruin every effort to keep the public at large healthy.
Yeah, and I will say, I guess just as a positive spin here, I think there is a world in which you can have college sports. Like, if I were to do it my way, it would be no crowds. You can make money off TV revenue. You know, I think that Texas could put together some kind of package, like almost a pay-per-view sort of thing, where you watch the game, but then you also get all these other benefits. I don't know. There's something there, you know?
Perhaps a dedicated TV channel for just the University of Texas?
There might be something to that. Yeah, just have...
We could probably get ESPN on board to help produce it. It'd be... I think that this could be a big moneymaker if we deploy it.
Yeah, put every game on Longhorn Network so that those three people left in the U.S. that don't already hate us suddenly have a reason to. But no, if every team is testing twice a week, and of course the big thing now is that the tests are actually being completed and having results returned quickly, you know, like no waiting period, if you can get it the same day or the next day, then theoretically there's a way to do it, test twice a week. Any player that test positive sits out 3 weeks, there's a way to have a safe season. But even that, I mean, like, what happens if Sam tests positive and suddenly he misses like OU and the next two conference games? Like, or the same thing on OU side, what happens if what's their new QB's name, Spencer Rattler? Yeah, what happens if Rattler tests positive, you know? So anyway, there's gonna be an asterisk on the season. I think that's pretty much for sure. But I kind of, right now, would lean towards there being some form of season.
I agree with you. It's too much money, not even just for the schools, but small towns like Clemson, South Carolina, basically depend on football season to float them. And I think that call for that money is just going to be too much to ignore, and we're going to force something through come hell or high water. The other big thing that happened was the university finally responded to the request of the student athletes. You may recall that Brennan Eagles put up a list of demands from student athletes at the University of Texas for changes that they wanted to see. Had a long list of things. It took several weeks, and I know that was frustrating for a lot of the players, was that things were not happening immediately. But upon sort of reading through all of the decisions, I can at least appreciate the desire to want to sort of do it in bulk. And they released it on a Monday, so it wasn't this sort of tucked away end of the day Friday, so it gets lost in the wash of a weekend news cycle. But dropped it on a Monday, sort of everything in bulk, addressed all of the points, all of the changes that were going to be made in response to them. And it seems like things went over pretty well. Guys like Juwan Mitchell, DeMarvion Overshone, and Brennan Eagles, all guys who talked about not playing as long as they felt UT was not responding in kind to them. They're all back practicing, so it seems like, at least for now, this has been resolved. I'm sure a lot of these things will come back up again, because UT didn't take care of all of the things to the level that the student-athletes were requesting, but they took care of a lot of them and had some interesting sort of ways to address those issues.
Mm-hmm. And that's the big thing. As long as the players are happy and other African-American students are happy, like, that's... I think that it's all, like, solid, but it's ultimately not my place to judge, so that's really what's important here. You know, like, my experience at UT was not in any way impacted by any sort of racist past. You know, like, as a white guy, that's just not something that ever factored into me. So if the people that have had that affecting them think that this is a good way to move forward, then I'm all for it.
Yeah, and you had guys, team leaders like Caden Stearns, who's been very vocal. Never to the point of saying he was going to sit out, but was very vocal in person, on Twitter, for the marches that they did with the team going to the state capitol. He was always one of the guys sort of at the forefront, and when this dropped, he seemed to be pretty happy. So, I can really only take cues from them because I'm in no position to decide whether or not this is good enough. So they seemed pretty happy. So for that, for now, I will be happy. But let's run through these real quick. Some of the changes that were made. Finally, renaming RLM to the Physics, Math, and Astronomy Building. I thought that one was pretty easy. I didn't see any reason why, like, from going through the history of who RLM was, other than he taught at the school for a long time, really didn't seem like a guy that you had to hang on tight to the name to. It was like, whatever, just get rid of the name. No big deal. That entire building needs to be torn down and destroyed, and they just need to try again. Racist history completely aside, that it's just an awful building. They just need to do it all over again. So that one wasn't a big deal.
It almost would have been worse to RLM to just keep his name on that building.
Yeah, this piece of shit is yours. You get to own this. This is your reward for what you did at the University of Texas. The next one they had, one of the complaints was for Painter Hall. Painter was a former president at the University of Texas who had a very, very public legal showdown with He-Man. Is it Sweat or Sweet? I don't know. I'm terrible at name pronunciations. For joining the law school, keeping him out. He-Man Sweat eventually was able to make it into UT. And for that reason, Painter Hall was one of the requests from student athletes to change the name of that building. The university won't be changing the name of the building, but they are going to create the Herman M. Sweat entrance to the building. They're going to place a statue of He-Man out front, and they're going to dedicate a large portion of the building and turn it into an exhibit that sort of goes through the entire story of that legal showdown.
Yeah, pretty cool concept. They're definitely, from what I've seen, they're adding, I don't know, a lot more statues and a lot more public recognition of some of the Black community's contributions at UT, like that statue, and then also the statue of Julius Whittier, changing the name of the field to the Campbell Williams Field. And let's see, the monument on the East Mall, did you mention that one? Yeah, monument on the East Mall for the first Black undergrads at UT.
Yeah, a lot of good statues. Texas on campus, it seemed like they always have quite a bit of that physical art and monuments and statues and all that. So I think this is a good way to do it, good way to really make it feel like it was always, or make it feel like it was part of the campus and not make it feel like it's set off to the side. Like, this spans across campus with these things. You don't have it shoved into a corner like, well, here's the section that the Black students get their stuff and then everything else stays the same. Feels like it sort of blends it in and makes it part of the university more fully. Yeah, and you mentioned Julius Whittier getting his statue. That wasn't a request for the student athletes, but they did want some recognition. Their suggestion was renaming a section of the stadium after him. But having a statue for him makes him the first non-Heisman winner to get a statue at DKR. So I think that's a pretty big deal. And you mentioned Campbell Williams Field is going to be the new name of the field, formerly named after Joe Jamail, who was a big donor, a very vocal, big money donor for the university, to the point that he was Mac Brown's personal attorney, basically up until Joe Jamail died. But Jamail's family came out and addressed it and said that they actually requested that the university do this. The university didn't come to them and beg them to change it. They offered to do that. I thought that was pretty cool, pretty selfless sort of thing to take that legacy that your father had with the university and put it towards something to help sort of heal possibly some of these wounds that have come out of the whole, this whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very, very thing to do, just being willing to, you know, like kind of let go of your own past for someone else's future.
Yep. And then I think the last big thing, I mean, we'll also throw out there, the student athletes had requested that the university make a pretty large segment or percentage of their revenue go towards Black Lives Matter, not necessarily the organization, but the movement overall and organizations that might have been supporting that movement. The university can't really do that because of sort of political rules. Public university is not able to give money to organizations that may be involved politically. But what they are going to do is the university is going to start up some programs that multi-million-dollar allocation of the athletics revenue is going to be put towards these programs to help recruit and attract and retain Black students, especially those in Houston, in Dallas, in San Antonio, basically in the big cities in Texas, and bring them in and get more of that at the university. Interim president, whose name is totally escaping me at the moment, and that's my bad.
It's Hetzel,
even
right?
Even brought up. Yeah, sure. You can look it up while I talk, but he basically brought up right now the University of Texas is like 5.9% of the undergrad population is Black, and a significant chunk of possible black students who were automatic qualifiers to get into the University of Texas chose not to attend Texas. And that alone is reason enough that we're missing out on extremely good students to be automatic qualifiers. They are intelligent students are choosing to go elsewhere. And anything we can do to make that number more in our favor, get more of those good students into the University of Texas, race aside, anything that you can do to get better students at the University of Texas is something that's worth pursuing. So I really appreciated that approach.
Yeah, I did too. This is my favorite part of the response. And it is, I was a little bit off. It's Dean Hartzell, who is currently the interim president. And I think that this sort of thing is a great compromise because you already went over not being able to have a public university, endorse a political cause, movement, organization, whatever you want to call it. But this is a great way to kind of get to a happy medium of something that actually benefits the university and reinvests in the university's future, but that also improves kind of the opportunities available maybe not even available, but just improves like Black representation at the university. And yeah, it's one of those things that I feel like it kind of ties in with affirmative action. Like in an ideal world, you don't have to do either, but we're not in an ideal world. And sometimes you need a little bit of a stimulus shot to help create equal opportunity where it previously hasn't been. So I don't know. That's kind of my interpretation of it. And one of the reasons that this is actually, in my mind, a really positive thing.
Definitely. And then the last big one, the biggest request that really made the headlines was that the athletes called for the removal of the Eyes of Texas as the alma mater for the university, given its history being that it originated at a minstrel show back in the early 1900s. And then there was a lot of debate as to what the lyrics meant, whether or not the fact that the lyrics were referencing the university president, who was sort of putting a spin on Robert E. Lee's words at, what was it, William University?
Yeah, I think William and Mary.
When he was the president. I don't know. One of those universities. But at the university where the UT president had attended while Lee was the president of that university, a lot of debate as to sort of the racist origins, where that line was for whether or not just debuting at a minstrel show, even though the history seems to be that it wasn't written for a minstrel show. It was written to be a school song, and it just happened to be that that was where the most people would be. A lot of debate as to where that line was for, is this racist? Is it too racist? A lot of interpretations of lyrics going into, is it from the perspective of a slave master with the whole Eyes of Texas, you cannot get away type of thing. A lot of mistaken information, misunderstanding on both sides, I think. Ultimately, what it came down to is Hartzell announced that the University of Texas was not going to move on from the Eyes of Texas. The Eyes of Texas is going to remain the alma mater, while at the same time announcing that we will have programs to educate about the history, and also just sort of a strong belief that at this point, it has more than outgrown those origins. It has become more than that to the university. And I think, I imagine you're probably the same as me. Maybe you were better educated than I was, but when I was at Texas, there was never a thought in my mind that anything that was said in the Eyes of Texas was racist. And it always was about sort of taking pride and realizing that by being a student, you will always be sort of looked to as a leader to do the right thing, to sort of lead not only the university, but the state as a whole and beyond. And that's sort of the responsibility you're charged with as a student and an eventual grad. So I mean, that one was a lot of internal turmoil for me. I still am not necessarily sure about how I feel keeping it around.
I'm all right with the outcome. I think the Eyes of Texas, like the way that you're talking about it, is like an awesome saying, right? Like, the Eyes of Texas are upon you. I obviously, it's a little bit disconcerting, just kind of the origin, but, you know, if we've done enough with it since then that it's not an issue, then obviously it is an issue to some people, but I don't know, I'm happy that we've kept it, I guess, is kind of my ultimate take, but I wouldn't have been angry if they had changed it.
Right. I mean, really, the only reason that really came to mind for me for why I didn't want to see us change it was because we literally do not have any other songs that anyone actually sings along to. People clap along the Texas fight and remember to say, give them hell, give them hell, oh, you sucks, or make them eat shit. You might, but not the majority of the stadium is just clapping.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, if we hipster it, we sing it. Yeah, gatekeeping, that's exactly what it is. It just felt like, well, if we lose that, then we don't really have anything where everyone knows the words and everyone sings it, because that's the only song where that is what you do. You hold up the horns and you sing along, and that's just what the Eyes of Texas was. You didn't have that with March Grandiosa. You don't have that with Texas Fight. You don't have that with March of the Longhorns or any of the other staples for the band. So that was really the only thing that I would have been sad to lose, is just sort of that being the only song that we knew the words to. But yeah, I guess I'm okay. Like we said before, if the players are happy, if they believe this is good enough, then I'm happy. I will be, if I'm at a game until further notice, I believe I'll just keep singing the song and remembering what it meant to me, rather than what it might have meant to the people who originally performed it.
And I've seen some players say they're not going to sing the song still, which that's their prerogative. So, I mean, I don't have a big issue with it. I hope that they still come and join in with the crowd, because that's always been cool.
Just to stand in front of the band. They just want to come out and sort of have that be sort of their exit music.
And even if they go to the locker room early, I'm not going to be upset. It's just, you know, it'd be cool if they didn't.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. I like the tradition in a vacuum, and I'd rather see the players out there, but I understand why they might not want to do that. All right, well, that brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you to everyone whose last name is not Brockermeyer, who might still be listening. We'll be back soon with a few episodes previewing our potential opponents for the potentially not canceled 2020 season, or potentially canceled, in which case it'll just be a fun episode to play What If. But until that time, stay safe, wear a mask, wash your hands, and hook 'em.